your daily dose of debate, breaking news, and uncensored views. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day to consider the place and the role and the time for politics. Because, of course, it's an election year. In a couple of months, we are going to be electing a new president of the United States. We may or may not have political conventions. They're coming up soon. The Democratic convention, not as soon as many people had assumed. It was supposed to start on July 13th. It won't. They're now looking at a month later in the month of August, but we'll see. With all of this going on, is it really appropriate to politicize absolutely everything? Well, the Speaker of the House is doing that. It was announced today that Nancy Pelosi is forming, and she has the right to do this. She's Speaker of the House of Representatives because the American people made the mistake of electing a majority of Democrats last time, many of whom are decent, hardworking people and serious public servants, I think, at least trying to be, but many of whom are just nuts, are just out there, are obsessed with various other priorities other than the one priority that I think Americans need to face right now, which is what do we do to deal with this pandemic, and then what do we do to try to minimize the long-term damage to our economy? There will be damage to our economy. There already has been dire damage to our economy, for goodness sake. So what do you do about it? Well, what Nancy Pelosi does about it is she selects a new House committee. It's a select committee of the House of Representatives, and it's going to be its purpose to examine the Trump administration's response to coronavirus amid criticism of the Trump administration's approach. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Democrat of California, said the panel would be modeled on the World War II committee led by then-Senator Harry Truman of Missouri. His service in that committee, where he did an outstanding job, made him president, by the way. That was why they thought of him as the replacement to Henry Wallace, who was very dubious, the sitting vice president. By the way, that whole story is in my book, God's Hand on America, and it's an amazing story. The new committee Pelosi is starting will not be like the Truman Committee because it will not be a credit to the country. It will not help the country. The Truman Committee really did help the country win the war. No, really, it did. Because it had a total budget for its investigations of $360,000, and it saved the U.S. war effort what is estimated to be at least $15 million, which was considered real money then. It exposed war profiteering and inefficiency and government waste. But by trying to appoint a committee like this about the coronavirus, is that actually going to save the taxpayer money or cost the taxpayer money and cost more time in lost attention? I mean, people who pay attention to the press briefings every day the president is giving, the guy is working hard. Is he always right on target to the press briefings? No. Are you kidding me? I mean, he didn't need to call Jonathan Carl a cutie pie yesterday. I don't know what that means and why he was so angry at Jonathan Carl's question about the ventilators. But look, all of this right now, it just isn't the time. We have other priorities. And the priorities have to do with actually trying to get this virus at least slowed, if not stopped and eradicated, so that we can restart our economy. Because lives depend on it. People's future depends on it. The ability for people to see other family members. If you are in one of those stay-at-home states, as most Americans are now, that all depends on it. Adam Schiff has his own idea. I mean, and again, this is in addition to and separate from, I assume, what Speaker Pelosi is talking about here, what she authorized here. Jim Clyburn, the the member of Congress, long-serving member of Congress, he's number three in the House leadership, Jim Clyburn, from South Carolina. He is the guy, leader of the Congressional Black Caucus, who helped to make Joe Biden the prohibitive front runner. His endorsement of Biden in the last week of the South Carolina primary was considered crucial in Biden's landslide victory, which stopped Bernie Sanders, for which I think every American should thank Jim Clyburn. In any event, here is Adam Schiff on MSNBC about what we need right now at this moment in our nation's history.
We're using the 9/11 legislation as our model. We adopt the same appointment mechanism to make the commission as nonpartisan and apolitical as possible. The commission won't involve any current elected officials, anybody currently working in the government or at the time of the commission's formation. But the most difficult challenge is, when should they begin their work? We want to make sure their work doesn't interfere at all in the response. We want to make sure that it doesn't have a political cast to it. And so one of the things that we're considering is having the commission formed after the election, having it certainly not make its report until well into the new year. After all, the 9/11 Commission itself wasn't established by legislation until more than a year after 9/11. So we may have the start date as late as early next year. But we really want to make this as objective as possible, because we want the recommendations to come out of it to be accepted by the public. And if it has any veneer of a partisan aspiration, it won't have the same level of public acceptance.
He's entirely correct, but here's the problem. Coming from Adam Schiff, it already does have a partisan implication, a partisan flavor to it. He was noted as such an implacable force, pushing and pushing and pushing for impeachment. And by the way, I think he is a smart and able guy. But hearing him day after day after day go after the president on what everybody knew was a doomed impeachment venture means that this commission that he's proposing will be altogether tainted, just as Nancy Pelosi's new committee to be chaired by James Clyburn. Clyburn is well respected, and she could get other people to chair the committee. But look, if she wants to do something like this to actually help the country, why not do it together with Kevin McCarthy? He's a reasonable person. I mean, I asked the same question about President Trump. He should have had Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer there for the signing of the rescue bill. But the problem is the Democrats don't even want to allow that. They are relentless that the biggest threat facing America, it's like Alec Baldwin said in his tweet. He said the virus actually infected America in January of 2017. When Trump was inaugurated, and the only vaccine comes in November of 2020. Ha, ha, ha. Chris Cuomo, also not particularly funny. He's down in his basement because he has tested positive. He's under quarantine. I hope he has a speedy recovery. But he said this, which is based on an untruth and even found by Snopes to be an untruth. Listen to Chris Cuomo.
Here's what I've learned. I wish I had gotten this virus a month ago, and I'll tell you why. I wish I would have had it then so I could have told you then, this is no joke. We are sleeping on something, and it is a mistake. And I would have had a different platform to jump on the president, playing it as a hoax and playing politics with this. Because that time, one of the reasons we keep going back to that time is because it's so painful that we blew our best chance. That's why we keep going back to it, especially when the president's inability to own it makes a journalist, makes a conscientious person suspect that he'd do the same thing again. You see what I'm saying? And we can't tolerate it a second time. Literally, I don't know that we survive it.
Okay, here's the problem. And it's come out. There are other leading journalists. Dana Milbank of the Washington Post sent out a tweet saying President Trump called the virus a hoax. This is all based on a rally, one of the last rallies he did before the rallies went goodbye, in South Carolina. And it was on February 28th. And here is what he said. He said this, and I'll do it very quickly, okay? What the president actually said, he says, now the Democrats are politicizing the coronavirus. You know that, right? Coronavirus, they're politicizing it. We did one of the great jobs. You say, how's President Trump doing? They go, oh, not good, not good. They have no clue. They don't have any clue. They can't even count their votes in Iowa. They can't even count. No, they can't. They can't count their votes. One of my people came up to me and said, Mr. President, they tried to beat you on Russia, Russia, Russia. That didn't work out too well. They couldn't do it. They tried the impeachment hoax. That was on a perfect conversation. They tried anything. They tried it over and over. They've been doing it since you got in. It's all turning. They lost. It's all turning. Think of it. Think of it. And this is their new hoax. Okay. And then he goes on. He says, but, you know, we did something that's been pretty amazing. We're 15 people. Cases of coronavirus in this massive country. And because of the fact that we went early, we could have had a lot more than that. Well, we do have a lot more than that. You can hear very clearly in the context, he did not say that the coronavirus was a hoax. He said that the Democratic assaults on him, trying to blame him for the virus, were a hoax. And the idea that you have to affix political blame on one side or another. By the way, there is a selection of Democrats. This was put together by Tom Elliott of Grabian. And it wasn't just President Trump. It was all of us who I think initially tended to downplay the dangers of this coronavirus and how wrenching it would be. Listen to this selection.
The risk to New Yorkers for coronavirus is low.
And our city preparedness is high.
This should not stop you from going about your life, should not stop you from going to Chinatown and going out to eat. I'm going to do that today myself.
Come to Chinatown. Here we are. We're, again, careful, safe, and come join us.
There is no concern at this time for coronavirus in our region.
The Department of Sanitation is ready for Mardi Gras 2020.
The facts are reassuring.
We want New Yorkers to go about their daily lives.
But there's really no need to panic and to avoid activities that we always do as New Yorkers. We are a hardy people.
Americans do not need to panic. What I would suggest, however, is that Americans take this as a wake-up call for seasonal flu.
There's very little threat here. This disease, even if you were to get it, basically acts like a common cold or flu.
So we're telling New Yorkers, go about your lives, take the subway, go out, enjoy life.
And certainly not to miss the parade next Sunday. I'm gonna be there.
If you had to, would you close down the borders?
No.
We need to be honest about the American people. With the American people about the fact that we can't keep people coming here from China.
And transmission is not that easy. I think there's been a misperception that coronavirus hangs in the air waiting to catch you. No, it takes direct person-to-person contact.
We also know that if it were likely to be transmitted casually, we would be seeing a lot more cases.
Right, because this is New York and you're in elevators and trains with everybody all the time.
Okay, these are some of the leading liberal voices in the country. It's Nancy Pelosi. You heard her there. It's Bernie Sanders very briefly. It's Bill de Blasio several times. And this is a point that I was making earlier. In other words, for people who want to criticize the Trump administration, who want to criticize any of us, and people who were not sufficiently alarmed by the coronavirus, who was? Who was the clarion call in the political class saying, oh, this is going to disrupt our whole economy. It's going to crash our economy. First of all, you could say that there were some senators who got a little bit of an advance notice or recognition that this was going to have a negative financial impact. I'm talking about Senator Loeffler and Senator Burr and Senator Feinstein and a whole bunch of other people who apparently, because they were getting the information in the U.S. Senate that most Americans were still unaware of, sold some stock. They're now in a world of trouble and a world of hurt for that. I don't believe, by the way, that what they did was illegitimate. Because apparently it wasn't their decision. This was a decision made by their financial advisors who were following the news. And there's no proof at all that they used this sort of insider trading or privileged information at all. And look, the reality of this thing is trying to use the coronavirus to score political points, either for or against the president of the United States, I think should backfire. It shouldn't work. And if you listen to Chuck Schumer on MSNBC, it's bringing to life that old Rahm Emanuel saying, don't let a good crisis go to waste. This is a real crisis. And what we need to do is deal with it and not politicize it the way that Chuck Schumer is anticipating. Listen.
I want to talk about this new talk of an infrastructure bill in Congress to get people back to work. What would that look like? Who would it put back to work? And are you taking into consideration green jobs, green infrastructure?
Yes. If we're going to look, the COVID four can probably be more forward looking at the economy. And if we're going to do infrastructure, because there's nothing better than getting the infrastructure going and going in a big, strong way, we need it big, we need it bold, and we need it futuristic, which means green. There's traditional infrastructure, roads, bridges, highways. We need that. But we also need new green infrastructure for the future. So we should do that.
Okay, what does that mean? More of the trains, like the trains we talked about in Seattle, that are a major, by the way, breeding ground, and buses for the COVID-19 virus. Bill Gates, speaking of Seattle, was on CBS this morning, and he was more sensible and constructive, as he is. He said, we do need a national policy. Here's Bill Gates.
Do you think there should be a national policy?
Absolutely. As long as people are moving around within the country, we're all in this together. It's not likely we're going to partition the country into all sorts of separate pieces, because things like food and electricity, there are essential functions where we still want people to be connected. So it'll help everyone get out of this more quickly and reduce the deaths and reduce the economic reduction if we implement these strong isolation measures on a countrywide basis.
Okay, and then he had something dramatic to add.
I find it so disconcerting to wake up every morning and think, well, that was a strange dream I had, and then say, oh my God, yes, you know, look, there's no traffic on the bridge, and oh yeah, my first meeting is on that computer screen, and my second meeting's on that computer screen, and you know, and somebody's going to leave some food, but I won't see them. This is super dramatic. You know, I use computer screens a lot, and I think about pandemics a lot, and even so, I can hardly believe we're in this situation.
We are in the situation, and in terms of the national standards that that Bill Gates says we need, and we probably do, the president is going to be speaking about that momentarily. We are going to come back to go directly to President Trump and his daily press briefing at the briefing room in Washington in the White House. We will also cover your calls, 1-800-955-1776, at some point. And we will also tell you about a pretty good new movie. Not a masterpiece, but a good movie, and certainly a thought-provoking one that is just being available on video on demand and DVD, which you can see at home, even with theaters closed down. There's also a story about how the Navy is handling the infection on the USS Theodore Roosevelt. There are about 5,000 sailors on that aircraft carrier, and 90 have apparently been diagnosed, tested with the coronavirus. So what's the Navy doing about one of the mightiest warships on the seas? We will get to that and to more. Coming up, the president coming right up on the MedVed Show.
This
The presidential press briefing is unfolding at the White House briefing room. Secretary of Treasury Steven Mnuchin is speaking to the press and the country.
Economic impact payments. I had previously said this would take us 3 weeks. I'm pleased to report that within 2 weeks, the first payments will be direct deposit into taxpayers' account. And as the president said last night, the president authorized me to say that anybody that has Social Security recipients won't need to file a new tax return and will have that. If we don't have your direct deposit information, we'll be putting up a web portal so that you can put that up. It is a very large priority. The president has made clear we want to get this money quickly into your hands. I'm also pleased to report that we continue to work closely with the Federal Reserve. We're in the process of designing a new facility that we call the Main Street Lending Facility. We're also looking at facilities for state governments as well. And I'm also pleased to report the Employee Retention Credit. It's up and running. The first $10,000 of wages, you get a 50% credit. That's $5,000 per person. And for everyone who's kept someone, you can immediately get that money. You can deduct it from what you owe the IRS immediately. If you don't owe us money, you'll get a refundable tax credit. So that is up and running. I'm also pleased to report we have the program up and running. We're taking applications from the airlines, from the cargo companies, and from national security companies. So thank you very much, Mr. President.
Thank you, Steve. For Jovita or Steve, any questions, please?
Yes. Mr. Secretary. A Chase Bank sent a letter to its business clients today saying that they don't have necessary guidance from the SBA, from the Treasury Department, to be able to accept loan applications starting tomorrow. The need is clearly enormous, but at least one major bank says they're not fully empowered yet to be able to help their customers.
Well, I spoke to all the CEOs yesterday. I had a conference call with them. We got very good input from them on what they needed. As I said, people were working till 4 o'clock. I believe we just put up the Federal Register with the new guidelines for lenders.
Look,
I've been assured that the banks will be in the process starting
as quickly
tomorrow.
As Steven Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, is saying, it will be a great tribute to him and to the bureaucrats who make that possible. At the very beginning of the press briefing, President Trump indicated that just as yesterday's briefing was focusing on the effort to combat the entry of illegal drugs, which greatly compound problems and at drug security, and I think that is appropriate, by the way. President Trump today was emphasizing small business loans and maintaining Social Security payments. Here's what the president had to say moments ago.
Nearly $350 billion in loans will be available to small businesses, including sole proprietors. These loans are up to 100% forgivable as long as employers keep paying their workers. Got to take care of your workers. Furthermore, we want Social Security beneficiaries to know that if they are typically not required to file a tax return, they don't have to file one in order to receive the direct cash payments that will soon be distributed to American citizens. The Treasury will deposit the money directly into the bank accounts, and don't forget, I will always protect your Social Security, your Medicare, and your Medicaid. We're protecting Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, and I always will.
That's the President of the United States at the White House press briefing. Look, there is a report in the Washington Post that the White House is apparently considering a formal push to get Americans to begin wearing cloth masks or face coverings in public to prevent the spread of the novel coronavirus. And I know that initially the expert opinion seemed to be that, look, the masks could do more harm than good in some cases, and they weren't that useful. That's changed. The expert opinion has reversed, and partially because they're coming out with better masks. And speaking of better masks and what do you do, look, it is an enormously serious matter when in a gigantic aircraft carrier, one of the largest objects actually ever built, mobile objects ever built, the USS Theodore Roosevelt, this carrier has a crew of about 5,000. Now think about that for a moment. About 5,000 people living on this gigantic and magnificent ship. Well, the report from Associated Press, nearly 3,000 of the sailors aboard the U.S. aircraft carrier Theodore Roosevelt, where the new coronavirus is spread, will be taken off the ship by tomorrow. Navy officials said yesterday, as they struggle to quarantine crew members in the face of an outbreak, that 100 of the nearly 5,000 sailors are the Roosevelt's now docked in Guam, have tested positive for the virus. But the Navy is moving sailors into various facilities and probably will begin using hotel rooms. Acting Navy Secretary Thomas Modley made it clear that while several thousand will leave the ship, other sailors will remain on board to continue to protect the ship and run critical systems. We cannot and will not remove all sailors from the Roosevelt, Modley told Pentagon reporters. He said officials will send as many sailors off the ship as possible while still maintaining safety. About 1,000 have gone ashore, and that number will grow to at least 2,700 within days. Modley and Admiral Michael Gilday, Chief of Naval Operations, declined to say how long the ship will be sidelined, but if crew members are required to be quarantined for 14 days on a rotational basis, the Roosevelt could be out of duty for weeks. As of Wednesday, 93 sailors from the carrier tested positive. 593 tested negative, Modley said, adding that 76% of the crew still needed to be tested. The Navy Captain Brett Crozier, who's the commander of the Roosevelt, raised warnings this week in a memo to his leaders. Modley said there are 94 Navy ships right now that are deployed at sea in the Atlantic and the Pacific and around the world. And the Roosevelt is the only one so far of those 94 ships with any infection by coronavirus. The Navy removed Captain Crozier. This is just breaking news. The captain of the aircraft carrier crippled by the coronavirus 2 days after the officer's unusually blunt letter warned that if the service did not remove sailors from the vessel more quickly, it would fail them. Navy Captain Brett C. Crozier, the commanding officer of the USS Theodore Roosevelt, was relieved of command at the direction of Acting Navy Secretary Thomas B. Modley. There is more to that story, and that doesn't sound encouraging at all. Seattle's police chief took to Twitter to warn residents of the spread of the coronavirus, while also informing them that they should call 911, not if they see people not doing unauthorized social closeness, not social distancing. And don't call 911, I don't think he's saying, if you see people going into a playground that's been closed off, but if they witness racist name-calling. Washington State is no place for hate. In a show of solidarity, Lori Matsukawa joined me to remind everyone that hate has no place in our community, said a post on Seattle Police Chief Carmen Best's Twitter account. Report hate, including racist name-calling, to 911. We are here to help and will respond to investigate. Well, I guess that's reassuring. When we come back, we'll bring you the very latest from the president's press briefing, and a co-founder of a leading website, liberal website, says he knows who's to blame for coronavirus. It's conservatives. Of course, we'll get to that and more on the Medved Show. On the Michael Medved Show, the very capable, and I think he is, Steven Mnuchin, the Secretary of Treasury, is laying out all the activist steps that are being taken by the Treasury Department in the midst of this crisis to actually try to allow the economy to bottom out and then to recover. And I think it's extraordinary. I mean, I know that there are a lot of Americans who may be in disbelief about the idea of a couple, typical couple, getting a $2,400 check just deposited in your account by the Treasury Department. It's kind of scary that the Treasury Department have that kind of access to your account. But we will see, he says, within 2 weeks. And that would be even more quickly, I believe, or just about as quickly as they promised initially. There's a front page article in the New York Times today that says economists fear drawn out slump as losses deepen. And this is a shame. The piece by Peter Goodman says the world is almost certainly ensnared in a devastating recession delivered by the coronavirus pandemic. Now fears are growing that the downturn could be far more punishing and long-lasting than initially feared, potentially enduring into next year and even beyond, as governments intensify restrictions on business to halt the spread of the pandemic and as fear of the virus reconfigures the very concept of public space, impeding consumer-led economic growth. In other words, people are talking about what you do in a situation once the social distancing policy is put aside. How many restaurants reopen? How many people will feel like going out to eat again and investing that money? We have President Trump is speaking again at his press briefing. Let's go to the president.
My administration is also issuing new guidelines to protect elderly Americans who remain the most vulnerable. By now, nursing homes should have suspended the entry of all medically unnecessary personnel. Today, we're further recommending that all nursing home facilities assign the same staff to care for the same group of residents consistently to minimize any potential spread. And we're also urging facilities to designate separate areas for healthy and sick residents. And this is a practice that we probably will be recommending into the future, long after the enemy is gone, this particular enemy is gone. We're also making every effort to provide relief to our great veterans. We take very good care of our veterans. At my direction, Secretary Wilkie will use any authority at his disposal to extend deadlines for benefits and to postpone debt collections. We're now conducting well over 100,000 coronavirus tests per day. It's over 100,000 tests a day. And these are accurate tests, and they're moving rapidly, which is more than any other country in the world, both in terms of the raw number and also on a per capita basis, the most. The FDA has also authorized the first coronavirus antibody test developed by Celex, a key step that will help identify people who have recovered and to understand their immune response and their immune system. Moments ago, I directed Secretary Azar and Acting Secretary Wolf to use any and all available authority under the Defense Production Act to ensure that domestic manufacturers have the supplies they need to produce ventilators for patients with severe cases of COVID-19. You know what that is, right? Become a very famous term, COVID, COVID. This action will help General Electric, Hillrom, Medtronic, ResMed, Royal Philips, and Vyaire Medical overcome obstacles in the supply chain that threaten the rapid production of ventilators. We have over 100,000 being built right now or soon to be started. We anticipate issuing more orders under the Defense Production Act in the very near future, in addition to the one
that I've just signed against 3M. We get the idea. It's fascinating to listen to the president speak because he still has this profound need to depart from his text, as he did when he was talking about spelling out COVID-19. COVID-19, he said. That's COVID-19. It's become a very famous phrase. You know what that is. Yeah, I think people do by now. There is a soundbite that I wanted to play here because I think it's typical of what we should truly, truly time to try to avoid. Jim VandeHei is the co-founder and CEO of Axios, and he was on MSNBC, not talking about solving problems, but talking about affixing blame. Listen.
You're seeing here, and this is a bigger problem for society, is information inequality. Like, why did DeSantis do what he did? Why did Georgia wait so long? It's because they were listening to President Trump up until the last 5 or 6 days. They were watching Fox News. They were listening to Rush Limbaugh. And they were following conservatives on Twitter or social media, all of whom were downplaying this. So people, the information was there, but in that information bubble, they were basically getting a lot of sort of noise and news pollution.
Okay. He obviously hasn't listened recently. Do I think that there were some of my colleagues in the media who downplayed the virus for too long? Sure. But we played you the selection from Tom Elliott at Grabian, a selection of leading liberals who downplayed the threat of the virus. And when people say we waited too long and it was terrible, what country in America than America responded better? China? One of the things we'll be talking about tomorrow is they're now saying that China's economic growth, which has been at about 6% a year, the growth of their GDP is going to slow all the way down to 2%. But how does China, which is where this virus started, end up with a growth of 2% when this is in our first quarter, the first quarter, when on an annualized basis, when our growth first quarter is anticipated to be down 15%, maybe as much as 30%. I mean, it's going to be down very dramatically. We'll talk about that with Gordon Chang tomorrow. And we'll also talk with Stephen Moore about how you deal with some of these economic problems. And it seems to me that right now, even if you look at what the New York Times is saying, and they're talking about all the changes, and people won't go out to public spaces, and they're worried about, will people come to sporting events? Will people go to conventions? Things could change very profoundly, and with people wary of their neighbors in a country where people are already more isolated than they should be. I will tell you the one thing that is striking in reading this over, and it's gloom, 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 is I do suspect that a great deal of it is political, because the assumption is that if we are not in the midst of at least the beginnings of a recovery, and people do expect that when we hit bottom and we punch back up, it's going to be very rapid and very dramatic and very noticeable, that all of a sudden we'll be humming again. And that should be reflected in markets, et cetera. When will that be? Most people had predicted that it would probably be sometime around September, October. And now, of course, it may be next year. Now, that makes a big difference politically. But can we at least agree that it will be sometime soon? Even this gloomy New York Times assessment does. Because that's what we need as a matter of confidence in this greatest nation on God's green earth.